The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. In our societies today, money is worshipped as the root of all happiness, and we've made it more godlike than God, especially in the Western world. Today, people are living on a dog-eat-dog merry-go-round of keeping up with the Joneses, of striving frantically to acquire the material goods and possessions they feel are going to make their lives happier. It's a world of double standards, a world of dog-eat-dog, a world of I'll do it unto you before you get the opportunity to do it unto me, because I know you're waiting to do it if you get the chance. It's a world of trying to justify our crimes and sins, all of our evils, by pointing to the crimes and sins and evils of other people. I've been on a series of programs on The World Tomorrow talking about a great moral law that goes absolutely contrary to human nature. The 10 cardinal principles of law, upon which law is based, generally. And those 10 great points of law were given anciently to one specific nation, but just because they were given to that one nation under certain conditions, people have assumed they are no longer binding upon us today. Now, you've probably seen the movie, but have you read the book about the Ten Commandments? I've been analyzing, point by point, every single one of the Ten Commandments and asking the question time and again, what's wrong with them? What is there about the Ten Commandments that makes so many people assume they are done away? That we don't have any use for them today? That they're totally out of date? That it's not obligatory upon Christians, as some people in the theological field seem to insist, to observe the Ten Commandments? Now, millions of people can't tell you what the Ten Commandments are. They don't know where they're found in the Bible. They couldn't cite more than one or two of them. You might try that on yourself. You can probably get about as far as thou shalt not. You might remember the word kill, or covet, or steal, or something else like that, but can you absolutely repeat by memory every word of the Ten Commandments? Only a tiny minority of the populace can do that. And yet here's the very basis of all law, the Ten Commandments found in the Bible. Now, I'm not going to be ashamed to quote the Bible on this program. President Johnson quoted from it recently. I heard where he was thanking people for their prayers when he was having his double operation. I see where President Kennedy had a Bible on the desk in the White House. I see where government and sometimes even military leaders quote from the Bible. So now, before you think I'm about to break into sobs and maybe play you some organ music, let me tell you, no, you're going to hear nothing like that on the World Tomorrow program. I'm not going to pray publicly. Christ said not to do that. He said go ahead and do it in private. And I'm not about to start some organ music. I'm not going to sing for you or introduce my daughter who is going to sing for you. I don't even have a daughter, as a matter of fact, but I do want to tell you about the Ten Commandments. We've been covering the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and now we've come to the 10th commandment that says, thou shalt not covet. And covetousness is at the very root and heart of much of what is evil and wrong about our society today. Now, what is covet? What does it mean to covet? Well, I think you know. It means to be gripped by a feeling of avarice. It means acquisitiveness. It means a lustful desire to have. It means jealousy. It's associated with greed. It's a gnawing, driving, anxious, innermost desire to have something inordinately that doesn't belong to you, that you can't afford, you can't pay for, it isn't yours. It's a possession of someone else. And people from the time of little children are gripped by the feeling of covetousness. Avarice in the hearts of human beings makes people sly. A pack of conniving, two-faced cheats and plotters who are out to get the other fellow before he gets them. I've been talking about the commandments against stealing. I've been surveying some of the world crime reports and talking about the skyrocketing crime inside the United States, about the percentage of increase, about the statements made by leading law enforcement officials of the rise in crime and how it's all out of proportion to the rise in population. Well, much of this crime can be laid right to the door of breaking the tenth of those commandments. Thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, nor his wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his cattle, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. So the commandment goes. But breaking that down, that's exactly what people do covet today. People covet
position, and that means neighbors' homes. Now, I want to talk about each section of that commandment and tell you what's going on in the economic field and what is happening to so many people to make wretched halts and miseries out of their lives, make their lives empty instead of filled with happiness, simply because they are filled to overflowing with a feeling of covetousness. And they've never sat down to analyze what drives them on. What is the basis for their approach to life? What's the reason for their slavings away at this or that job? What is the driving purpose? What is the goal in their life? What makes them think the way they think and say the things they say and feel the way they feel? What makes them the total personality they are? Why is it they express their feelings about politics, economy, business, industry, sociology, government, the military? Why is it people are filled with such a desire to get? Why is it poor nations hate the rich nations? The same old story of the poor man who hates the rich man just because he wants what he has. Let's analyze it in our own hearts and minds. Because covetousness is greed, it's lustful, it's avaricious, it's a lustful desire to have something someone doesn't earn and doesn't own and can't afford and probably shouldn't have because he's not of the character where he would rightly use it. But the increase in crime today, especially crimes such as theft, shoplifting, purse snatching, muggings, robbery, that type of thing, based upon the feeling the world owes you a living. But it's perfectly all right, people reason, to steal from large corporations because they can afford it. It's perfectly all right, military men and employees of government reason, to steal from the government because of all people, they can certainly afford it. And don't they tax you and don't they take from you, people reason? It's perfectly all right to steal from the supermarket, housewives reason, because the supermarkets are hanging labels and putting packages on some of their things that they know are not quite right, and the supermarkets are charging them enough to make up for their trading stamps and all of the other losses that they experience from the depredations of housewives, so everybody takes a good stab at getting somebody else. Automobile theft, bad check passing, counterfeiting, forgery, all these come from a lustful, covetous desire to get something for nothing, to have. Now let's just break it down section by section the way it is in the commandment. People are commanded, people, not just Christians. People in the Belgian Congo, although it's named differently today, it's not the Belgian Congo anymore. And you know, even this thing of the emerging new nations has a little bit to do with covetousness on the part of some people. It means people anywhere. It means people in Tasmania to Thailand and people from India to the United States are commanded not to covet, not to lust for something they don't own. Now, when you break it down, do people covet one another's homes? Well, some of the most glamorous magazines today, some of the Sunday inserts in the big newspapers, are selling pictures of wonderful, beautiful homes, of the way they're decorated, the way they're built and laid out, the fabulous homes in some of the architectural digests and journals, the way other people live. One of the favorite and popular pastimes of many a lower income person or many a middle class American or Briton is to drive through, if they have an automobile, one of the real fine residential areas and kind of watch and look and stare and leer at the way rich people live. One of the favorite bus tours in the Hollywood area is going by the homes of the Hollywood stars to see where people live, how they live, what they possess, what their homes look like. And, of course, the same thing is true when you talk about lusting and coveting after people's wives. If people would analyze their own hearts and minds honestly, and, of course, being honest with oneself, to thine own self be true, is kind of a rare commodity today, and I know that. That's why I'm talking about it so much on the World Tomorrow program. They would realize that tremendous percentages of the divorce picture around the world, and especially in the United States where we lead the world in divorce, is directly attributable to lusting for someone else's wife. Or like as not a girl they never married, or like as not somebody of their dreams, or like as not the vicarious lovemaking they see going on increasingly in motion pictures. And you know, I'd like to take just a minute to comment on that. I think it had been 6 months, maybe 7, maybe 10. I've actually lost track since I have been to a motion picture. A long time. Well, I decided I would take my wife and children, my three boys, ages 13, 11, and 10, to a motion picture. I'd seen one advertised, and it had a great deal to do with World War I. And they'd even specially built actually put them together in factories, handcrafted authentic replicas of World War I German, British, and American fighter aircraft, and they were going to show all these absolute historical facts about some of the German aces and so on. Of course, I realize there'd probably be some war in it, but that's all right. I can teach my kids about that and show them what that's the hideous part of it. That's where all the death and destruction came from. So we went to this motion picture, and we got into it. Apparently, it's quite long. I didn't realize that. It cost a lot more than the average motion picture did. I think it took me for $6.25, even considering their ages, and my wife and I. We got in just barely before the intermission. And of all things, here's this officer in one of the most unbelievably frank lust scenes I'd ever seen. He's actually making love to his senior officer's wife on leave. She invites him into her room. It's right out in the open for everybody to know what's going on. And then follows a scene that was one of the absolutely most hideously embarrassing that I'd seen ever in a motion picture. Real quickly, my wife and I hustled the kids and turned them around, got some chains in her hand, said, quick, I didn't want any popcorn, and she didn't either. But they said, go buy some popcorn. Get out of here and go buy some popcorn. So they did, and by the time they came back, it was intermission. So real quickly after intermission starts another such scene. Only this time, the woman comes out of a shower, and she's wearing exactly a towel, and she grabs this fellow and begins tearing at his shirt. Now, this is supposed to be a World War I aerial combat picture, and so far there's been one aerial combat scene in the thing, and she's tearing at his shirt. And so that was it. We just grabbed the kid and said, come on, let's go. And we hustled him out of the theater and went home. We were in there exactly about 35 minutes, and 20 minutes of that was intermission. I don't know. Maybe I'll try again sometime. But I doubt it. Maybe I can. If Walt Disney ever listened to this program, I hope he'll get on the ball and make a whole lot more of those nature studies, because when those come out, I go to see them. But I've seen two or three of those several times over, and my kids have seen them several times over, but I'm guaranteeing you I'm not going to have my 10 and 11 and 13-year-old boys sitting watching a Technicolor scene of some of the most disgusting pictures that I've ever seen in a motion picture. What's pretty about a naked man's back with all of his moles and pimples hanging out, nice pink flesh, as this woman is frantically tearing at his shirt? Now, we like to kid ourselves. These movies are just fine. Oh, sure they are. And so is the new men's deodorant called Hogwash. That's right. They're going to try to compete with the Cornhuskers look. You've heard about that, haven't you? They're going to come out with a new one now. You know, about how all of the men's deodorants are taking off on this because one of the magazines came out with all of the dozens of men's deodorants. Now, this is the new style. Now, not only women can smell real good, but men can too, even with their larger pores. And they have one that's supposed to be real masculine. It's called Cornhusker. I guess it gives you rough hands. I don't know. But some other company is going to compete with it, and they're going to start selling something called Hogwash. So if your girl comments on, boy, you smell just like Hogwash today, you can say, well, that's because I use Brand X. But you know, you can lay right at the door to all the divorce cases and the broken homes many of these media of public entertainment, which themselves create nothing but covetousness and lust in the minds of human beings. The average husband just cannot. He just cannot. He doesn't have that much character, and he doesn't have that much restraint on himself to at least handle his mind to sit in a motion picture theater by the hundreds of hours a year, which is the norm in our Western society, and to live vicariously hundreds of different cases of in this case, well, out-and-out fornication and adultery, all types of little tete-a-tetes and kissing scenes with the secretary, the wife across the street, the little eggnog party on Christmas, and the rest of it, and still go home and claim to be absolutely mentally and spiritually faithful to just one sweet wife that he loves very much. We like to kid ourselves in this tinsel false society of ours. We don't like to admit our society is based upon lies. We don't like to admit we live, many of us, lies, that we enjoy a vicarious scene such as that while stuffing popcorn in our mouths. I didn't eat any of the popcorn, incidentally. Not that you shouldn't, just that I think it's a little hard on your digestive system. But it was a good reason to get the kids out of a theater for a moment. Well, so it goes in the world of entertainment. Wherever you look, it seems that covetousness, lust, vanity, jealousy, greed, sex, vicarious licentiousness, these are held up as the thing to do, the exact way to live. The Hollywood sex idol, who's had five or six kids and whose latest marital partner comes into the living room only to be met by the little golden-haired daughter who says, "Daddy, will you please sign my guest book?" And so we like to laugh at it, make fun of it, and this is the way of life. It is characterized as being the kind of life that most people would really enjoy. We're told in the Bible, in the Word of God, "Thou shalt not covet." And that's broken down in Colossians 3, covetousness, which is idolatry. And in Ephesians, the 5th chapter and 5th verse, where it says, "And a covetous man who is an idolater has no inheritance in God's kingdom." So it also overlaps to break the first and second commandments, primarily the second one that says, "Thou shalt have no graven images." You're not to make unto yourself any graven images or any likeness of anything that exists in heaven above or the earth beneath or the waters under the earth. You're not to bow down yourself to them nor serve them, because God said, "I, the eternal, thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousandth generation," as that could read, "to them that love me and keep my commandments." Well, the command against covetousness directly, according to the Bible, breaks the command against idolatry. Now how? Well, because what people covet becomes their god. That's what they serve. Now people serve and lust for their god of money today. We think we're real advanced in the Western world. We have a monetary standard that is very much more advanced than some of the ancient pagan cultures of earth. And yet we've made money a god. Now our money is just so much paper, useless, worthless stuff. The best use you could get out of it, if the bottom falls out, is maybe to warm yourselves very, very briefly over the fire you could build, but you'd build it with great difficulty because, let's face it, that paper doesn't burn too well. And you can't eat money. For that matter, you can't even eat gold. But at least you could look at gold. At least you could decorate your home with it, or you could wear it on your hand or around your neck or in your nose or in your ear. But we feel we've advanced today. You know, anciently on the island of Yap, that's out in the South Pacific, there were a group of natives whose whole barter economy was based upon, it had a kind of a standard, but it was a millstone standard. It was based upon millstones. And these millstones of volcanic rock had to be brought with great difficulty on large sailing vessels from another island many, many hundreds of miles away. And so they were so rare that these became the standard of the island nation's economy. And a person would trade X number of cattle, or goods, materials, or food, or maybe a daughter, like as not, for a certain percentage or section of one of these millstones. Now, the millstones reposed as decorative fence corners on people's front yards. And it was said that, "I'll give you two cows for one-fourth of your nether millstone, or your largest millstone." And so the deal was struck, and the people shook hands, and this fellow could go over and look at the quarter of his millstone. He could sit in the hole in the middle of it. He could fondle it with his hands. He could scratch his initials in it, maybe. He could look at it, rub it. It was a lot of fun to play with. It was his, and it was a standard of wealth, and everybody knew that it was his. And when he walked down the street, people knew that he owned 6 1/4 millstones. And along came a horrible storm. This is a fact, by the way. I'm not kidding you. This really did happen. You could look it up if you'd like to. And along came a horrible typhoon one time and blew a lot of the millstones right down into the bottom of the bay, the lagoon. Huge tidal waves came crashing in there, huge storm waves, and a lot of this debris and everything was right out in the bottom of the lagoon. Well, they got up on the heights of the mountain, and of course those beautiful, clear tropical waters were real clear, and they could see down through there, and sure enough, there were the millstones down in the bottom of the lagoon, all covered up with water. But that didn't change anything. They went right on using the millstones. They were just as secure there as they would have been in somebody's front yard. And they went right on using them as their method of exchange, the basis of their economy, even though they were down underneath the waters of the lagoon. Now, we're so advanced today that what we do is to put our basis for our money in metal boxes attached to cables which work like elevators, and we sink them deep down in water-flooded caverns underneath Fort Knox. You may not have known that, but the gold, you know, is stored in vaults, and those vaults are in deep underground silos which can be severed and as an emergency method can be plunged many, many feet down in a cavernous area surrounded completely with water so as to make tunneling into them absolutely impossible. Anybody would drown like a rat if they attempted to do it. And every now and then somebody comes in and puts a different label on the bricks and maybe gets them on a hand truck and shoves them from one side of a room to another. Now, you can't see them. You can't go visit them. You can't sit on them, surround yourself with them, play with them. You can't even scratch your initials in them. But that is the standard upon which our money is based. Now, in Britain, of course, it's the silver standard, but increasingly the gold standard's replacing that because America is having to help keep Britain afloat before the World Bank. And, of course, even America is going to have to be kept afloat one of these days because foreign claims on our gold we actually own right now are out of all proportion to how much we owe, so that if all of our creditors immediately demanded payment, we would be, well, absolutely shot. We would be bankrupt. We wouldn't remotely be able to repay them all. That's the condition we are as an economy. Well, it's interesting, then, that this gold, while people covet and lust for money, the money that they lust really isn't the money so much as it's what the money will buy. It's what the money represents. It's the goods, the commodities, the homes, the automobiles, the prestige, the symbol of wealth that they covet. And so most people are living way over their heads financially today. They're living at least 30% over their heads. Bankruptcy is at an all-time high. Small businessmen folding up, going out of business. People living a miserable time and trying to make both ends meet frantically and scraping and scrimping here and there, and so many wives working, the percentages are appalling. And the numbers of children under 12 years of age being left at home because mama works to help augment the income, these are also appalling. And what that is doing to us is a sociological problem of mounting juvenile delinquency and crime is also an appalling part of the problem. And people just are living way beyond their means. It was said recently in a survey that when most people were asked, what would they like? What would be the one thing they would like more than anything else? They said 30% increase in their income. That they felt if they could have 30% more money each year, that would solve all of their problems. And a survey conducted by Printers Inc. magazine revealed that 76% of the advertising industry's executives who make over $25,000 a year. Now, mind you, that's a pretty good sum of money. $25,000 a year, and yet these men, 76% of them, were unhappy in their jobs, and over a fifth of those interviewed blamed that gloom on the belief that they were underpaid. Now, that's a pretty good evaluation of one's abilities, isn't it? They're making $25,000 a year, and they feel sincerely they are underpaid. It was a poll by McCall's magazine in the United States. I can't speak for you British, but I know that the same sociological problems grip both of our peoples. We're living on double standards and we're filled with covetousness. A recent national poll by McCall showed that more than one-third of the families in the United States, including families with incomes of as much as $15,000, would need financial assistance within a single month if the wage earner's income stopped. Now, of course, that means pretty good business, I suppose, for a lot of the medical insurance companies and all of that type of thing, because people realize if their income stops, they've had it. That them continuing to live in the standard to which they would like to become accustomed means continual work on the part of the person who is hauling in the income, and it means no accidents, no sickness, no interruption of that work through strikes, being thrown out of a job, flooding in the market, whatever happens. 18% of them said they would need outside help within a single week if their day-to-day income stopped. They've got no savings, they're living on a day-to-day basis, and absolutely no possibility of surviving any kind of interruption of their source of income. Now, I think you know, without me going into it over and over again on this program, that most people are living way over their head financially. That they're buying without the money to pay, buying on high interest rates over long periods of time, buying thinking only about monthly payments, not about how they add up. I have had an interesting evening or two watching some of the shows where once in a while on television they will have, the shows are sponsored by used car dealers or by new car dealers, and usually always they'll get to their used car lot. And it's like Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen were saying on their program many years ago. Charlie, the wooden dummy, was saying, or Bergen rather, was saying to the dummy, Charlie, there is no such thing as a perfect crime. And the wooden dummy says, oh yeah, you ever bought a used car? Well, I sat there with a pen and paper one night Here was one contract, I forget what it was, $600 and some. I'd have to figure that out. I'm not sure what it was, but it was about 42 months and about $42 a month. And all you have to do is sit there with a pencil and one after another of those great, big, special deals that were just breaking the back and tearing the heart of these fellas they were giving away so cheaply cost you from 40 to 60% interest over a four-year period to where you'd have that clunk about 2 years, it would fall apart on you and eat you up in repairs, and you would still virtually owe more on it than it would then be worth. Well, I guess people are buying them because they just look at the dollars per month sign. They say, well, I can afford that. Let's see, 42 a month. And they go and buy it without even taking the time to add up what that means. It's unbelievable, but that's exactly what's happening. Can you imagine 50, 60, 70% interest on some of these items? Now, packagers and distributors and supermarkets and automobile dealers and designers and manufacturers know that people are guilty of impulse buying. They know that people are filled with so much covetousness, so much lust, vanity, jealousy, and greed, that they know the compulsive grasping clutch for the pretty package, the impulsive purchases of the pretty model home in the new track, the impulsive purchase of the new automobile with a new style of bent tin that makes it look a little different than the one last year, is going to end up in them making sales and selling their products. They know that impulse buying, the one-stop shop, is by far and away the best method to get people to buy today, because advertisers, sellers, packagers, distributors, retailers know that you, Mr. and Mrs. World, are so filled with covetousness, you're so filled with lust, you desire to have, that you're going to reach out and clutch for that pretty package, the pretty new automobile, and you're going to follow your desires every single time. I'll talk more about it next time. You talk about things people lust after. They lust to change their height, shape, and weight, and color, and texture of hair. They lust for a different colored wig every week. Some people claim that blondes have more fun. Well, I wouldn't know about that. Maybe you better check and find out for yourself, though, because I'm not quite sure that is true. It's getting increasingly hard to find a brunette anywhere. Most people are using the bottle or else a wig. And it looks like 50% of the American population is becoming blonde. That's kind of a shift. I thought that was true of Norwegians and maybe Swedes, but I didn't know that was true of Americans. Well, I'll talk more about it next time, and then I'll show you exactly what it does say in the Bible about covetousness, and we'll muse just a little bit on what kind of a world would it be, and you'll find it would be pretty much a different world if nobody anywhere had the slightest bit of greed or avarice or covetousness in his heart. It would be a fantastic world if that were true. In the meantime, you need to write for this booklet on the Ten Commandments and see every one of these commandments broken down and expounded and magnified in terminology you can easily understand in the light of life the way people are living it in this modern world today. The booklet on the Ten Commandments is absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it whatsoever. And write for the article on Were the Ten Commandments in force before Moses? If you want to find out whether or not they were given way back prior to that time, Were the Ten Commandments in force before Moses? The current Plain Truth magazine, this article, President Johnson visits Australia, the Iron Curtain gathers rust, the article on a four-eyed look at evolution, and seven keys to mental mastery. They're free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.